You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 105, the second anniversary episode of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I am delighted to be joined by Mark Schultz. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tom. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. Now, longer time listeners, or some people may have heard a little bit about you and your story via your wife Sarah's episode, if they've listened to that episode 93. She briefly touched on the fact that you have Hirschsprungs and there's a family history of Hirschsprungs. So we kind of delve through that a little bit as well. We talked mainly about your son Remy and his Hirschsprung story in Sarah's episode. In this episode, we're going to kind of go through your story, your family history, and how you've been able to achieve so much as well, which is fantastic. But would you like to just sort of start with a little bit of sort of family history of Hirschsprungs? Because there's a fair bit within your bloodline.
Yes, I was just thinking about it. So fourth generation confirmed. So I guess what is our family history? So there is a specific genetic mutation that has been passed down. And through the power of genetic, we have confirmed that Remy has it, that I have it, that presumably my mom must have had it, right? As a carrier, because she did not have Hirschsprungs. But my mom is the oldest of five, and her two youngest, my aunt and uncle, both had Hirschsprungs. And so they also did the genetic testing. So they're also carriers of this variant. So my grandmother, who is an only child, must have carried this gene. And when we dug a little bit further down when Remy was first born, we unearthed that my grandmother had two uncles, one of which died from stomach complications at birth. Of course, we're talking now in the 1800s. So presumably that was likely Hirschsprungs, and the other one died at a young age also of stomach complications. So needless to say, I think that probably gets us to five generations in our family. But it also means that I've had the fortunate position of growing up with Hirschsprungs, knowing what it is, having an aunt and uncle and a mother who had taken care of her younger siblings. So my mom is the one who is a real champion here in terms of taking care of a son, well, really an aunt, an uncle, a son, and now a grandson who have had Hirschsprungs.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Because I get questions and comments quite a lot from people who say, is it genetic? Is it not genetic? And the answer is sort of sometimes. There is no sort of definite, you will have Hirschsprungs, you won't have Hirschsprungs, because as Sarah said in her episode, you have two children. So you have one child with Hirschsprungs and one child without Hirschsprungs. So
exactly. And I also have a brother, and he does not have Hirschsprungs, and neither do his two children. So the odds are that he also is not a carrier either.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, for me, that type of thing is just fascinating. And it's kind of, in sort of how things get passed down, some things that don't get passed down, because as we know, when people have a child, some get passed from the mother, some get passed from the father in terms of genetics and DNA and whatnot. And it just fascinates me how what gets passed down and what kind of doesn't get passed down, really. So you've kind of grown up knowing, as you said, growing up knowing what Hirschsprungs is from a very, very young age. And sort of so from that young age, and we'll talk a little bit about sports and running in a bit, but you've always been very active throughout your life.
Very active. I mean, sports was basically what I wanted to do. Soccer is still my passion, played soccer my whole life, but I played basketball, I played baseball. Now at some point I decided that I didn't want to destroy my legs or break, all the things that come with being an adult playing soccer. So I started running marathons. Sports has always been big. I've always been very, very active, as has my dad, right? He was the same way. He was very active growing up, and I guess that Hirschsprungs was never, it was a big part of my life. It was never even a consideration for me in terms of being active, right? From my perspective, I have a couple of scars and that's it. You know, there is no, I think the funny thing, right? Obviously, this is a stomach issue. And look, there are certainly lingering effects, right? Like I am missing I had short segment Hirschsprungs. They removed part of my colon. And, you know, I had three surgeries where they did an ostomy, and then they did the slice and dicing and pulled it through. And then they did a third to reverse the ostomy, which obviously now they've gotten it to a point where they can actually, I mean, case by case, with Remy, even with a total colonic Hirschsprungs, they were able to do an ostomy and then do the pull through all at once. And so for me, it's like, I have a couple of scars. I have some stomach issues. I probably go to the bathroom more than most people. That said, not even a consideration if I'm running a marathon, never a consideration with sports. I think it's something that you are aware of, but it's not something that is going to inhibit your ability to play a full game of soccer without having to go to the bathroom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that as well, because it's, I think when I talk to a lot of parents and they have a child born with Hirschsprungs, and maybe it's something where they've never heard of the condition before, and they think, well, what can my child do? You know, are they going to be able to go to school? You know, are they going to be able to, you know, play sports? Are they going to be able to do this, do that, do the other? And obviously it depends, you know, case by case, as you said. But you've kind of shown that, yeah, you can, you know, run marathons, you can, you know, do really well in sort of the corporate side as well. And hadn't mentioned that yet, but we will in a bit. But it's, and I love that it's still kind of, you can do anything, I guess, can't you?
There, it is a physical ailment. It has not prevented me from doing anything that I wanted to do in my life. And having a son with total colonic, right? So the worst case it can, or one of the worst cases it can possibly be, he's doing great. He's doing terrific. And, you know, our goal as parents, of course, is just to give him the same advantages as every other kid, which is, you know, get him proper schooling and get him, you know, give him a comfortable home and, you know, give him a happy life. This is just something that he's going to have to live with. And I think this is true of everybody. Everyone kind of has their thing, right? It could be Hirschsprungs. It could be that they have anxiety. It could be a million different things. Everyone has their thing. And this just might be Remy's thing. And that's fine. This was my thing. And it did not prevent me from doing what I said. And again, you know, I think that there's certainly something to be said with having a mother who grew up with it, who knew how to take care of me, from having an aunt and uncle who were, I guess, comrades in that sense. You know, we were ribbing Sarah. If anyone's listening to her episode, I think she had dated my aunt and uncle by at least 10 years. So they were born in the late 60s. So they were, you know, I guess they were 20 years before I was born. And so my mom was 14-ish years older than them, if I recall correctly, 10 to 14. She was very much helping out at that point. And with my aunt and uncle, just their history. So they both had long segment, we think. We think because they had no idea back then. When they had their ostomies, there were no bags. So my mom recalls putting, instead of the barrier and the bag, right, with the ostomy, they just had aluminum paste. They would put aluminum paste around, and then they would take Vaseline gauze and put that around it, and then they would put regular gauze and a belly band. There was nothing to catch the stool that came out. And I had to remind myself of that. My mom, I just said that's gross. And she's like, yeah, well, that's what we had. My aunt had four or five colostomies done where they just kept taking out more and more of her colon until they figured out what worked. My uncle Rich, was a little bit better as I understand it, even though his was a little more urgent in terms of when he had to get his ostomy. But what I recall of them growing up is, they both had a lot of scars. So like we would go to the beach with my uncle, same thing, sports, golf, right? All of the things that are normal for a kid, but his stomach looks like a maze of scars. And, you know, it's so different than what I have even 20 years later, and even what Remy has, right? A smaller scar than that. So we've come a long way, but it hasn't really prevented them from living a rich life either. But as it would have it, neither of them had biological children. My aunt adopted, and my uncle married a woman who had 5 kids already. So needless to say that neither of them had biological children. So it was always, Sarah mentioned this, it was always a thought for me, if I have biological kids, what could the result be? I don't think any of us could have imagined it would be as severe a case as Remy, but here we are. I am in a fortunate position, and he will be in the fortunate position to have others who have had long segment in my aunt and uncle, who've had short segment in me, and can manage it and know it and sort of speak to him about some of the challenges that come with it, but also show him that there's a totally normal life ahead of him.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way of looking at it as well. I mean, because it's very easy to dwell on the negatives and dwell on the, oh, well, I hadn't done this, or I can't do that, or, my stomach might hurt sometimes, or this, that, the other. But if you flip it around and you go, well, actually, I'm still able to do this, I'm still able to do that, I'm still able to play sports, do this, go to school, go to work, all of that stuff. I love that. And I really love that way of, and thinking is something I try and promote very often on here. And if we talk about Remy as well, I know Sarah went through Remy's story, a fascinating story. If no one's heard that yet, please go back and listen to that one, episode 92. But you are very much in charge of sort of Remy's medical procedures. Is that right? Sort of his medical.
Yes. So we like to joke, Sarah and I, that she's very much the general, and I am sort of the grunt. She's a strategist, and I'm the doer. And it works out very well with Remy's kind of when he has his medical needs. So things that I'm in charge of, if Remy starts developing a rash, or certainly after his pull through when the rash was as bad as it gets, that was on me. When it comes to if we have to irrigate him still, which is rarely these days, usually that's on me. I am doing most of the diaper changes. I will change him at night. I was testing out all different things. So I think I hated to hear this. First let me say, Remy's doing terrific. He's almost 3 years old. We have gotten to the point now where there is no rash. We have gotten him down to roughly, say, 4 stools per day, most of which are in the potty. So we get him to go on the potty and we sit with him and he goes. And so he kind of empties himself that way. He can eat almost anything without it having any effects. We still, obviously there are certain things that we don't give him. Popcorn and corn are just absolute no's. But other than that, he lives so normally. So how did we get to here, I guess, is the question, right? When I think of the worst, when I think of like the PTSD, or, however severe you want to call it, it's certainly there. It is certainly when post pull through, when he had his really bad rash. There's one particular night, we had a family wedding, and we were up at the wedding. This was about 3 or 4 weeks after his pull through. And he had had some blueberries that day, and he was not able to process it whatsoever. Awful, awful night of screaming all night because his stomach hurt and the rash. And so, we we said no more blueberries, whatever. But that rash was just so persistent for years almost. And we finally solved it through trial and error. And that's what I hate to hear. Trial and error. What works best for your kid? We went through all of the different creams. Every single one that we ever heard of, we tried it. What we ultimately landed on that worked for us is basically the thicker, the better. I think we use Coloplast, triple cream. And then we also, you hear it using ostomy powder a lot. What that does is it really like kind of cakes it on there. Well, ostomy powder is really expensive. And so at some point our doctor said, oh, well, really, you can use any powder. So we use antibacterial powder and it works just the same. But like getting that really thick coat on where even if he does stool overnight, there's some level of protection. That has really solved his rash to the point where we actually don't put rash or any diaper cream on him normally these days. We only do it if he's starting to develop a rash and we kind of nip it in the bud early. So figuring out what kind of cream and what kind of regimen works there. And then medicine, that's the other piece of it. So we were very resistant to give him any Imodium for the longest time. And of course, now you feel like, well, why didn't we just do it earlier? Once we started giving him Imodium, he takes 4 Imodium pills per day, which when I tell a normal person that, they're like, I don't think I would go for a week. I'm like, great, that's to get us down to a baseline of 4 times per day. And we give him soluble fiber as well. And that even that is a challenge in terms of, well, how will he actually take this fiber? Because it doesn't taste good. He doesn't like it. And so first we started mixing it in with bananas, and then he was okay with that. And then he started gagging on bananas. So now I've been mixing it in with applesauce, and he's starting to not like that. He's not really interested in Jell-O. Yogurt seems to be the one surefire thing. But again, he has to take it every day, twice a day. And so what has helped is obviously figuring out what he likes, but also just being honest with him. He's almost 3, and maybe having him scoop the fiber into his applesauce and having him crush the Imodium pills up. We're not trying to hide anything. I've actually found that has been really helpful. And then you can remind him that this is for your tummy. This will make it feel better. So the medicine has been a life changer in terms of slowing him down and also bulking him up. When he starts getting sick now, his stool turns very watery. We're obviously so keen on it. It even has like a different odor to me. And that's when we know, okay, stop the Imodium so that he can get whatever sickness he's trying to get out, yada, yada, yada. So those are the kind of things that we are paying attention to. But also there's pooping on the potty, which has been huge because we are slowing him down a lot. He still needs to move everything through him. And so, if we notice any streaks in his diaper, we sit him on the potty. And it took a while to get him to be okay with that. But we sit him on the potty. We read some books. If things are really bad, we might show him some TV. We bought this new like reward jar. He loves, he's a boy. He loves trucks, right? We bought him this jar with little plastic truck things, which is a reward jar. So every time he goes, he gets to put a truck in and he loves it. We've gotten to the point now where he does, like I said, say most of his stools on the potty, and then he won't go overnight. He won't have to go overnight. That is how you get the rash better. You give it a while to actually heal itself. That, along with cream, along with the medicine, all of these factors together have like gotten us to this point. It has taken 2 years to get here. It has come with a lot of bumps. But we are here, and for a long segment, not a long segment, a total colonic Hirschsprung's kid to get here, the doctors in DC are thrilled. They are a terrific team. They were very helpful. But ultimately, it was really on Sarah and I, and as the, as the grunt in this case, and the scientists too, trying to figure out what works, we finally got there. And of course, you look at the Hirschsprung's groups to figure out what others are doing and hopefully find something that works for you. We tried them all. Finally found one that worked.
But that's brilliant. I mean, and you're right. I mean, trial and error can be such a pain. literally, in a lot of senses.
You just want the answer, right? Like, if your child is screaming at 2 a.m. because their tummy hurts or they have an awful rash, you just want the answer. And it feels like such a cop-out to say trial and error. But that's the answer, is you just have to keep going. And remember, too, that he is getting older, and so therefore it is getting easier. He can tell us if he says my tummy hurts, we know that, oh, well, you probably have to go to the bathroom. That's just not something that happens when you have a newborn or even a 2-year-old for that matter. So it gets better over time, and then they are able to help you. But in the meantime, you have to figure it out for yourself.
You do. Yeah. And that's the really, really difficult bit. But as you said, now that he's obviously at communicating stage, it then becomes an awful lot easier. Whereas if, like you said, from 0 to 2 or from 0 to 1, that communication stage is really, really tough. And you're sort of trying to find signs and patterns and things like, right, well, if this happens, we need to do this type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where are
we? That's exactly right. But we, I don't know if everyone is the same, but the pattern with Remy often is that he will, again, most of the stooling happens in the afternoon or before bedtime. And so it's almost like he kind of fills himself up during the day, and then it kind of like comes out in the evening. And that's just Remy's pattern. He still frequently stools in his diaper overnight. But like I said, it is worked just fine for us. And it usually, if he does sort of like empty himself when he's sleeping, that just means that, okay, well, we're going to go into the day. He can go to school in the morning. And the teachers don't have to worry about him having to go to the bathroom, because it's not like a normal, presumably a normal person. I am not a normal person, where you feel like you have to go. You go, and then that's the end of the story. It's a lot more sitting and, playing and just kind of keeping him relaxed. And then at some point, he's going to start going. And it's funny because, one of the things I learned through Remy is all about the anatomy of having 2 sphincters. So you have an external sphincter, which Hirschsprung's kids can, they can control that. Right. But then you also have an internal sphincter, which Hirschsprung kids cannot control because it's in the rectum or whatever. Because they don't have the ganglion cells there, they cannot control that inner sphincter. But that sphincter still is there. And so in order for you to pass stool, you have to be able to push through that. And so when Remy goes, you can see his face turns red and it's just like, it's really gross, but that's how he has to get it out. And of course, that's the other thing that I learned about myself. I'm like, wait a minute. So you're telling me that I cannot control, even with short segment, I can't control my internal sphincter, which means that I have, it takes more effort for me to push the stool out. Now, as I understand it, the difference is that I have a large intestine, or at least a portion of my large intestine, which makes it easier for me. Remy does not. And as our surgeon in DC said, the small intestine is wimpy. And so it took a little bit longer for him to figure it out. And so that's why you get rounds of Botox, as we got for him, to allow him to relax it. We got Botox for him twice. That's when he started to really learn to go on the potty. And at some point, when we thought maybe we'd have to get Botox again, he ended up figuring it out for himself. So we're in a really good place now. But it does, it does sort of lead to, I think, some humor here, right? Which is, not having an internal sphincter also means that in order to pass gas, you have to push it out. Which, if the worst thing for me is that I'm gassy all the time because I have Hirschsprung's, it also means that in order to get that gas out, I have to push it out. Which has led, all of my friends growing up to give me, nicknames with love. My college friends call me Farty Mark, which, It's an earned nickname. I also have to remind my wife, Sarah, that, you know, I've got Hirschsprungs and I can't help it. I don't know that she, you know, we'll just say that she doesn't love it. It's true. It's true, though.
I think we have an excuse for life. It's not our fault.
It's not our fault. But, you know, she does say, like, maybe you can go to the other room. And I'm like, all right, that's fair.
Yeah, these are,
you know what? These are normal conversations in any marriage, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think, I know it's not our fault because it comes on suddenly and we can't, you know, nothing we can do.
It's a lot. It is a large volume of gas. It is too much gas, but you have to get it out. And so, you know, there's a long history there with my friends growing up, with my college friends. But look, I work at Bloomberg. I work in a corporate environment and always have. We have very long meetings. This is not something I'm thinking about as I'm in a meeting. It's just something that is a fact of life. And, you know, when you go outside in the morning and you're walking the dog, like, you know, that's your time to decompress.
Literally.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Exactly.
No, that's great, because I've long held that belief that it's not our fault and that we should be given sort of, you know, leeway, a lot of leeway,
a long leeway. Yes, a very, very long leash. But you know, I think we've, you know, like I said, I'm interested. So as it comes back to, you know, Remy and me for that matter, I think the reality is that, you know, gas is very funny for boys. And so, you know, Remy it was always funny for me and my friends and, you know, presumably for Remy. I have not asked my aunt about this. Presumably, you know, it's a very different situation, but I do think there's certainly some element of, you know, there's a social aspect of this, you know, as I understand it. I think my aunt and uncle had mentioned to me at some point that growing up, they used to, you know, they used to wait or try to wait until they got home or somewhere more private to go to the bathroom, because it just doesn't, you know, especially with long segment or total colonic, you know, we're talking about a lot of unprocessed stool. It smells really terrible. Let's be clear. Remy really, really puts the, you know, puts us in our place when he goes, but we're all cheering for him because, of course, he's learning. But I think there's definitely a bit of that. And I know that when we speak with other parents and even look on the Facebook groups, as we approach Remy going to kindergarten in a couple of years, getting teacher's aides or getting him access to a special bathroom is something that we're thinking about. Even as long as maybe in college, we spoke with a family friend who so happened to have Hirschsprungs. Her son now just had his first kid, who does not have Hirschsprungs, by the way. But he had long segment. And even when he went to college, they asked for a sort of special access, or I think a dorm room with its own bathroom. So I think that that's the other thing to think about as well, is when there is special attention needed, you can almost always ask for it, because it is a real condition and it is something that people do have to manage. I am fortunate enough where I don't feel like it has changed my daily activities, but it doesn't mean that it's not for everybody, and Remy might fall into that category as well. But again, I think we are hyper aware of it, and we'll always give him what's best for him, just like we would do to any other kid, whether they have Hirschsprungs or not. It's just his thing.
Absolutely. I think you're right there with sort of special dispensation, because and possibly Hirschsprungs people not being aware that they can ask for it. I mean, even, you know, like obviously you and I have short segment, but I don't think I ever thought about, you know, asking for special dispensation for bathrooms or, you know, this, that, the other. I think it's possibly about making people, and sometimes as well, we know this, when you mention Hirschsprungs to 99% of people in the world, they have no idea what you're talking about. So I think it's also about making people aware, I guess, as well.
Yeah. 1 in 5,000 is a stat that we always hear, but I think you and I, when we spoke before, we did the math in terms of, if this is your 105th episode, you know, you're getting up there in terms of percentages of people who you can maybe contact who have Hirschsprungs in the world. And so, you know, at the end of the day, like it is a small community. It's wild to think that I have 4 living family members who have this disease. We're going to Thanksgiving on this Thursday, and we said we have to get a family photo of, you know, the 3 generations of Hirschsprung kids, and we can show off our scars. Coincidentally, my mother had rectal cancer a few years back, and she also had to have an ileostomy, which the doctors assured her that this had nothing to do with Hirschsprungs, but you know, we were also assured that Remy didn't have Hirschsprungs in the hospital as well. It seems far too on the nose to me to be a coincidence, but you never know.
But yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. I mean, I know. And Sarah, when Sarah talked about Remy's story, you were almost sort of, you know, told outright, oh no, it's definitely not going to be Hirschsprungs. It's not. And the amount of times I get told in various, you know, episodes where people have had doctors say to them, oh, it can't be passed on, oh, it's definitely not, and it's rubbish. Like it's unique, I guess.
It's unique. I think the way that I've sort of, I don't know that I've necessarily come to terms with it, because it obviously creates such a stress, but you know, doctors are scientists at the end of the day, and the way that scientists approach things, they like to eliminate everything before they get to the answer. So eliminate what it isn't. And the reality is that Hirschsprungs, you know, unless you do, you know, the gold standard is to do a biopsy. Unless you do a biopsy, you're not going to know for sure. And so they're not going to do that somewhat invasive procedure unless they have to. And so they will continue to try to eliminate things until they finally figure out that it is Hirschsprungs. Even if you tell them that I have a family history of Hirschsprungs, and I myself had Hirschsprungs. So, you know, again, growing up with Hirschsprungs is interesting because I've always known about it. And so, you know, even I was thinking about this. This must have been one of my very earliest memories, is like, what lasting impacts has it had on me? Nothing lasting, but I do recall having accidents, especially overnight, for a long time. I don't know for sure, but I would say until I was 5, maybe even 6. I can recall my mom, after having an accident, washing me in the kitchen sink, which actually sounds gross when I say it, but you know, that has to be one of my earliest memories, the fact that I fit in the kitchen sink. But, you know, it also kind of reminds you that kids, very young children, remember more than we give them credit for. And so, you know, Remy coming up on the age of 3, you know, he is going to remember these traumatic experiences. And so obviously, if something comes up, and especially with something like, if we have to irrigate him, that's one of my earliest memories, again, is Dr. Schullinger, who was my surgeon. He had to stick his pinky, I think it was his pinky, at the time it felt a lot bigger than a pinky, but he had to stick it up my butt so he could check the scar, that the scarring was healing appropriately. And again, I had my surgeries when I was 1 year old. I must have been 2 or 3, and I can recall this. So needless to say, our kids are not going to remember very much. What they're going to remember is that the parents are there. They're going to remember that some things did happen, but ultimately these are necessary things so that they can live a long and healthy life. And so if it takes, you know, Dr. Schullinger sticking a finger in my butt to make sure everything is healing, great, fine. I remember it. I'm not thinking about it every day. Coincidentally, my Aunt Nancy, who was a little bit older when she had her ostomy, my mom loves to recall when she told Dr. Schullinger, like, don't stick your finger up my butt. So it's come a long way, but that has not evolved. That is still how doctors are checking. Sarah told the story about when Remy got, like, how advanced has medicine become when your surgeon, when your son has a prolapsed ostomy, tells you to put some sugar on it and it'll go back in.
But it works.
It works.
Yeah. Who thought? Who would have known?
It's so rudimentary, but a lot of this stuff is. It's like, great, you have an ostomy. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to cut a little hole in a sticker, and we're going to stick it on, and then we're going to put a bag on it, and then it's going to catch the stool. Great. Great. Change that every other day.
Yeah.
Great. We're going, and then, you know, they do a pull through, and it's like, okay, great. Now we're just going to use diaper cream, and then we're going to use Imodium, and we're going to use five. None of this is, you know, we're not coming very far when it comes to the medicine of this. It is the physical ailment of, you don't have nerve endings. We're going to cut that piece out. We're going to reattach it. And then you might have some lasting issues. Could be worse.
Yeah. I think it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. But sort of circling back to you as well. I know in Sarah's episode, she talked about a 5K that you were going to run. I think, yes, when we recorded it, you hadn't run it yet. Now, obviously, you completed that 5K. I imagine for a guy who's done a few marathons, 5K is not exactly the hardest thing in the world. But you raised quite a bit of money as well. Do you have the final figure?
It was over 23,000. 23,423. Is that right?
Yeah, fantastic.
That's good. I work in finance, so I need to remember the numbers. Look, my wife, when she said that she wanted to raise money, I remember her asking me, like, are you okay with this? And I said, of course I'm okay with this. But I think the reality is we hadn't talked about Remy's story that publicly yet, and certainly not to our friends. Well, maybe our friends, but not to the degree of that. Extended family were aware, but maybe not to the degree. But certainly our coworkers didn't know as much, and our acquaintances, they weren't maybe aware of the extent of it. And so I think for Sarah, it was something that was really powerful. And we raised $23,000, which is really unbelievable. The race itself, the 5K down in Washington, D.C., which was held by Children's National, it was really, really terrific. I mean, the 5K was great. There were some, I think they had over 10,000 registrants, which for a 5K is a lot. You're running through the Washington, D.C. Mall, which is cool. I was running not that bad. I was running fine. So I was call it middle of the pack. And ahead of me were some really, really fast runners. And behind me were a lot of people with their families pushing strollers. So it was really, really, really lovely day. And then after they did the 5K, they had the kids race. And so Remy ran in the threes. And it was so wonderful what Children's National did. They had all of the nurses and some of the doctors dressed up as superheroes and Disney princesses. Our kids were in heaven. All the kids were in heaven. And they had them all waiting at the finish line. It was 100 meters. And so Remy ran it. We had him in a superhero cape. I took one of my favorite photos I think I'll ever take of him just running and just so happy. And then Emma, our oldest daughter, ran it as well. We had such a really, really great time doing it, and something that we're going to make an annual tradition.
Brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic. And congratulations as well on raising over $23,000. I mean, and as Sarah said, you know, that money is going specifically to helping people with medical supplies.
Supplies with traveling to DC if they need it, and even since then, you know, during our trip down to Washington DC, we saw our care team, and you know, they were talking to us as well about how the money's going. It's helping families who might be in a more rural area who have no access to care at all, help them get to DC or get to Cincinnati, which is has another terrific colorectal practice, or, you know, or Denver, or, you know, I don't know about California. We have not yet explored the U.S. hospital system in California yet with Remy, and we hope not to. But yes, it feels, it's something, at the end of the day, it's something very small that we can give back for others. And again, we are in a fortunate position where we can travel to DC And we did have access to some of the best care, and we just want others to, who might not be in a same position, to have access as well.
I think that's fantastic. That is fantastic. Again, fantastic work on raising so much. And it sounded like a brilliant day as well. So I think it's all good all round, I reckon.
All good all around. And all the credit goes to Sarah for organizing the fundraiser, sending out the emails. And I mean, for any of our friends and family who are listening, just absolutely overwhelmed with the amount of support that we received from, you know, even the expected places and the unexpected as well. And you also hear stories of people who you didn't realize were dealing with something similar. You know, they hear Remy's story and it just, you learn a little bit more about them. Like I said, everyone has their thing and you just don't really know unless you ask, or if somebody in our case broadcasts it to this small community.
Yeah.
But yes, we are, I think if nothing else, we are in a really good place and Remy is going to have a terrific life. Now we are on the normal things of potty training and school and sharing, right? The normal things that come along with being a kid, and giving him extra medicine every day is just part of our routine. And we hope that if anybody has any questions or want to chat with Sarah or me, I know that we are happy to do so as well.
That's absolutely fantastic. Because both of you, having now interviewed both of you, I think you are incredible people to have in the Hirschsprungs community. You know, I mean, the stories you've both told, obviously the family history as well, and the success you both have is absolutely incredible. And I love it. And I was going to finish by asking sort of the future for Remy, but I think you've just told it. So I'm going to ask you another question instead. And it'll be kind of the future for you, I guess. You mentioned obviously you work for Bloomberg. You have run four marathons, I guess, in terms of for you in your, I know you said your Hirschsprungs, you don't think about it too much as life goes on, but what would you like for you future wise?
I think the same thing as everybody, right? We are raising two wonderful kids. I would like professional development. I would like, my kids to continue to excel and be healthy. I would like to have a rich family life. It's like I said, Hirschsprungs is not something I'm thinking about every day. It's just something that I've lived with, and I just want the same thing for myself as anybody wants, which is just happiness. And, you know, happiness for myself, happiness for my family, my friends, and of course for my children. Part of that, of course, is caring for Remy and making sure that he knows that this is a physical ailment that is something that you live with. It is not a barrier to doing anything that he will want to do. What is in my future? It's just giving my kids the life that I was able, especially Remy, right? With this case, giving him the life that I'd able to have, which is whatever I wanted to do, I've went out and done it. And the same thing for my daughter.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. I just want to say thank you so much. To you, to Sarah, to your whole family for sharing these stories and for also celebrating my second anniversary with me. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, and I wish you all just the very, very best for the future.
Hey, congrats on 2 years. It's a big achievement. 105. Yeah. Like I said, you'll have to calculate the percentile of people you've spoken with, and then when you get the energy for the next 105, you can keep ticking up.
We will. I'm not as good at numbers as you are, though.
Okay, I'll get the spreadsheet in order for you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Mark. And again, all the very best to you and your family for the future.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.